All right, it's ticking. All right, today is Sunday, May 13th, 2012, and it's the last shiur for the year in the response literature classes, or Makorot Balacha, call it what you wish. Tomorrow we're in full stride, and next Monday we're in full stride, but next Sunday there is no class for the simple reason it's Yom Yerushalayim, and the major celebration will be literally at this time. Now, I want to say hello to everyone here and everyone listening across the world, and I received a very fascinating letter. And if you recall, when we did the tshuva of the man who wanted his wife, not to shave her hair, to wear a, or she wore a shaitel, and he was opposed, whatever. And Reb Moshe gives this person Musa, and I know that you are beardless, and you're not worried. Anyone? Yeah, he was worried that they'll think the shaitel is real hair, and they'll think she's not covering her head. And he says, how come you don't worry about shaving, that people think you shave with a razor and accuse you, and you don't worry about it, so why worry about your wife? It's her business, not yours. Anyway, could you believe it? Ira Wishnitzer from Chicago, my student many years, he knows the person who asked Reb Moshe the Shaila. So he writes that David Lapa, Mr. Lapa's son-in-law, is Rabbi Dr. Jerry Loeb, a Lakewood alumnus and psychologist living in Chicago. I sent Dr. Loeb a link to your lectures on the topic and asked him your question. Dr. Loeb told me that his father-in-law still does not know how Rabbi Feinstein knew that he shaved. Mr. Lapa was not personally known to Rabbi Feinstein. On a separate note, Rabbi Feinstein's letter is framed and hangs in a prominent place in the Lapa household. He must feel familiar to you. He's referring to what I told you, that the Rav called me a Reformed rabbi, and to be put down by the Rav and to hear it on tape, 1957, I played it for my students, and I was so proud because I said, if the Rav calls you a Reformed rabbi, that is the sign, Shehu Machshiv Otcha. So he writes to me, he must feel similar to you, that it is a privilege to be rebuked by such a learned man. This is correspondence that relates to Shirim. Fabulous. So you see, he doesn't know until today how Reb Moshe knew that he didn't have a beard. But he doesn't say that. Then he discusses what we discussed for so many months in class, inter-ethnic marriages. So listen to this. Concerning Sephardic Ashkenazic intermarriages, I am married to a Bukharan Jewess who grew up with a strong Sephardic Masorah. And obviously Vishnitzer has to be a Hungarian, okay? He has to be an Ashkenazi Tahar. Married to a Bukharan Jewess. Over 20 years ago, I called Rabbi Shechter about whether she must follow Ashkenazic Halacha. And Rabbi Shechter has to be Reb Heschel Shechter. Rabbi Shechter instructed that we can have separate posting. She only needs to follow my minhagim. So my wife warms up my food with gravy on Shabbos and instructs me to stay out of the kitchen except when it comes to cleaning up. Rabbi Shechter allows me to eat the food since we always say Kidei Sheyasa on food heated without reliance on a legitimate opinion. So that's a very fascinating paragraph. Do we agree with Reb Heschel? Remember all the opinions we saw? Be very hard to agree with this opinion, because here the man, remember, the most lenient was Reb David Halevi, but later Reb Ovadia, that was with Balei Tshuva. Here the man is not a Baal Tshuva, he's the head of the house. I have a feeling there's a little bit of a feminist influence in here. But I love what he says. She can heat up the food for you, but keep out of the kitchen. Okay, anyway, we're ready to roll. So last week, we discussed a very interesting topic, which is more important, a sefer, psakim, or responsa literature, And he was the last great old-fashioned rabbi. I don't want to use the term old-fashioned pejoratively, just descriptively. Reb Zelikman Bamberg, Reb Yitzchak Dov Bamberg, the Würzburger Rav. And he was a Gaon Adia. There was modernity in him. He already organized a school for teachers, but he was a Gaon Adia. And he was a big Baal Plukta with Reb Shimcha Ful Hirsch on the issue of Austrit. And Rav Bamberg's descendants accused the Hirschians of bringing about his early death by the Machleiket. If you read the literature on the period, particularly Hermann Schwab's history of the Orthodox Jews in Germany, I believe it came out in 48 in England, in London, so you'll see that Hermann Schwab ends off the chapter on the Machleiket that he's positive in heaven, their souls are good friends. Now, when he died, he left endless notebooks filled with tshuvot and chidushim, and he left the tzava not to publish them. And his children, and I showed you how I researched it through Sinai, through Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Unis' article, his children turn to the Netziv. Do they destroy it, or can they publish it? And the Netziv's tshuva, that is epic-making, a Lithuanian approach. There's nothing more important than Chidushei Torah, nothing more important than the Torah you write, and Chas v'Chalila, you cannot destroy it. And the Netziv, you saw what he does, that he brings down two Gemaras that we analyzed in depth, in Baba Batra and Ketuvot, that when you paskin lahalacha to a shayla in front of you, you have siyata d'shmaya. And therefore, he had siyata d'shmaya when he paskin. The Netziv's big problem is, of course, and if you checked out the Beit HaLevi, the Akdama to the Beit HaLevi, the Rav, I heard the Rav so many times. One day I'll go back. I did it in the Kollel, actually, about 30 years ago, 25 years ago. I have to go back to it one day where the Rav spoke about the Talmud Chacham, the Ishiyut of Torah, the Torah that's written on your heart. You own it. It's yours. So of course the Netziv is very bothered. If you own it, then Rav Zelikman, Rav Yitzchak Dov has the right to tell his children to burn his notebooks, bury my notebooks. But you see, the Netziv had to differentiate, and he said, yes, you own it, but you cannot destroy it. And because of the Netziv, endless volumes were published, and the Würzburger Rav was zeicher that he has a grandson, a great-grandson in Oceanside, who evidently, I met him, a balabas of the highest level, and a Talmud Chacham, and he evidently made money in his life, and he published two tremendous volumes, really big, beautiful volumes, with the story of the Würzburger Rav and more Kitvei Yad that weren't published. And it's really a Kiddush Hashem. When you look back in retrospect, all right, this is responsive literature. And as we'll speak about, and we've spoken about, and we'll continue to speak about, and it's axiomatic to being a Torah Jew, there's an ongoing process of hitgapshut, of crystallization, of skim aleim kol Yisrael, that tome of the Rambam, the Sefer to Mishnah Torah, and the Rav, I told you, I heard it from the Rav in the 50s when I was a kid, sitting in his class. I have to admit, in the 50s, sitting in his class, I was at a Meretz to the second power. When I visited with Rebbe in Boston and spent the Shabbos with him in 78, I was already living in Israel for 10 years, and I spent the Shabbos with him. So then it was only an homage to the first power. And I spoke with the Rav, I mean in detail, and I pinned him down, and we clarified. And there's no question, you're right at Shuvah, you may be right, you may be wrong, but there's an ongoing process. Now, you saw, I walked into class here last week. So if you recall, you were discussing, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, with your Rebbe, Rav Asaf Betnash, you were discussing a Kohen studying medicine. And I told you the Rav discussed it. We never got a heter out of the Rav. I told you the Rav, it was classic Rabbi Soloveitchik when they were talking, the Polei Agudat Yisrael. See, you can't understand Poli Agudat Yisrael because it doesn't exist anymore. But Poli Agudat Yisrael was a real serious movement of people who are Hudistim, but were part of the big world. They were much broader. What happened was, ultimately, their children either went right or either went left. But Poli Agudat went off the map. And I knew many of the leaders of Poli Agudat. So I knew them personally. I taught their children in Mechala. So they were playing, I taught their daughters, but they were playing with the idea of and this came up in Scandinavia, I think it was in Switzerland, because they didn't have enough bodies to do research on, of coming up with plastic bodies, like a kid builds a toy, a plastic body. So I'll never forget, as one of the boys asked Rebbe, what do you think of this idea, plastic bodies, Kohanim can go to medical school? And the Rebbe says, would you like a doctor to work on you who never saw a real body in medical school? And that was classic Rabbi Soloveitchik. But you saw Rav Gorin's tshuva with wearing a bracelet, a metal bracelet, and therefore once the coin is tame, because the bracelet is tame, everything is too matmate today. So once you're tame, you can be matami yourself. All right, he wrote a tshuva. It's a big chop. But you saw it was dismissed. Rav Moshe dismissed it. Others dismissed it. So Rav Zelikman, even though he was worried, but the truth is there's nothing to worry about because you can paskin what you wish, and in the course of time it will be discussed, it will be accepted, it will be rejected. And I don't have to go any further than from Washington to Washington, the story I tell you how I came up with that in the Kollel, with that unbelievable Trei Rube, Trei Sveika, call it what you wish, a Sveik Sveika, to be Matar that Aguna. Remember? So, what do I do? How do you work it out? And this is not simple. In America, as I write in my book, in America, I would have gone to Reb Moshe. In Israel, you got to go into the Beit Din. All right, I got this top lawyer pro bono because I sent him to Russia. In other words, from the Mossad, I made all these contacts, and anyone I sent to Russia would do whatever I asked. Rabbi Rubin will testify. You came back. His late wife, what Judy Rubin did, I write about in the book. It's beyond words. So this lawyer who charges $500 a minute when you breathe in his office went to the rabbinic court. The rabbinic court says, oh, Harafakefid, so Gonut, you know, they're so impressed. But we ain't learning God. We don't have the self-confidence to be matir. So they moved it into the court that deals with Juchasin. They said again, halam benuti nifla, you know, and the lawyer, Rabbi Frimmer, quotes Harafakefid, some of them had daughters who had learned with me in the class, because they taught Israelis. So everyone is impressed, but no one will budge. So then I go to Rabbi Vajra to get an appointment with Rabbi Vajra. Again, was protexi. I don't know how to do it. We come into Rabbi Vajra Friday. The office is filled with people, with petitioners. They lead us right in. But Rabbi Vajra, I taught his daughter. I have to tell you, in 1 second, his eyes lit up. And he looks at me. Tatsodek. Tatsodek. And he says to Dov, call me a week from now, I'll have a tshuva ready. And usually, you know, I tell you in the book where you can see the tshuva published, and it was like 20 legal pages. But even Rav Avadya says, b'tanai, that two more gedolei haposkim agree with me, because they're chidush. So we went to work, we got Rav Mashash, we got Rav Yisraeli, which was good, you didn't want to only have Eidot from Israel, we had one Ashkenazi. And then God was kind to us. We were ready to send the lady into, you know, into be matter everything. She can get into Russia. The curtain fell, gave the guy $1,000. He danced for joy and gave chlitza. And he asked her, this big communist asked her for a visa to come to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Now, I want to come into another area with Shuvah then Psakim. And I'm going to show you something amazing. And I want to speak a few words about to give Yeshiva University credit that it desperately needs. But first, you see, at times, you're learning a Sefer Psak. So all of you here are studying or have studied Yoredeya. Without Yoredeya, you're not going to get Smicha. All of you, including in Torah Shrag, I'm sure, every kid has studied Orech Chaim. Right or wrong, you study Mishnah Berurah, you study Orech Chaim. Some of you have looked at the Orach HaShulchan. You're already intoxicated by the Aruch HaShulchan. So again, you're studying Shulchan Aruch, you're studying Psak. You open up Shmiret Shabbat Gehilchata, you study Psak. All right, you open up Rav Moshe, you open up Rav Obadja, Yabi Omer, Yechavadat. You're in a different world, in a world of Minchat Yitzchak, Shelet Teshuvat. And as I've told my students throughout the millennium, never study Shelet Teshuvat until you're bucking in Shas and Pesachim. For one simple reason. It is so fascinating, you'll never open a Gemara again. I mean, to go through Rav Moshe, to go through Rav Obadja, to deal with life situations, the Minchat Yitzchak, it's fascinating. And once you are caught, you're caught. Tell me, do you recall a case or two where the Sheila Utshuva actually becomes Psak, and that when you study the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, you're studying a life situation and it's blended right into the Psak? Gentlemen, probably the most famous example, the prime example, and also it may be the most famous tshuva that we have from the Ramah, and it all goes back to Minhag Yisrael. Let me give you a drop of background. All of you know, we've spoken about this many times, most of you are married, you got married Sunday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. No one in this classroom, to the best of my knowledge, got married on Friday afternoon. The original minhag was, particularly in Eastern Europe, I don't know about Eidot HaMizrach, that Yosef Chaim, you have to check out. But in Eastern Europe, the weddings were held Friday afternoon. The reason was very simple. You don't have to be a great historian. The reason was very simple. People were poor. And you know, when you go to a wedding, you eat a wonderful meal. Jews like me, when you reach my age, you don't eat so much during the week. But for Shabbos you eat. I still knew people from the old city here who became wealthy, but they grew up very poor. And Yosef Perlman, Zichrono Levracha, used to tell me, he came, you know, from the real old city crowd. He said, the Yishuv HaYashan, he used to tell me, they were all sick Sunday. I said, what do you mean you were sick? He says, we didn't have money to buy a lot of food. So all week we ate a little. Shabbos we feasted, and Sunday we had stomach trouble. So if you make the wedding Friday afternoon and you make the Sudat Shabbos, the Sudat, the Nesuin, the Sheva Brachas, the poor people come, everyone eats, everyone has a big meal, rich and poor, and this was Minhag Yisrael. Now there's a downside. And I'm ashamed to tell you that I not only know this from the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch, but I saw it in my lifetime. The people involved are no longer alive, but I saw it in my lifetime. And I say it to you and to those listening, maybe I'll have some hashpa, because you see this today. It is one of the greatest Chilul Hashems we have in the Torah world. And it's very simple. Here we are all committed. You fellas are finishing smicha. You haven't gone into the big world yet. You live in a world of holiness. You live in a world where the biggest machloket you experience is one Rebbe fighting another Rebbe over Ekveis. Do you say a bracha on Yom HaTzmut and the Halel? Don't you say a bracha, which is better, Nevadek, Slabatka? But you're going into the big world. You're going into the big world, and the big world will have influence on you. If you don't hold by learning, and if you're not strong spiritually, some of you lower ladle will become reform rabbis. I don't have to give you examples right from this kol. I can list four names of four of our graduates who everyone claims they're Orthodox, Shmorthodox, Mamish reform. I can give five names already. Mamish reform rabbis. One of them, who's a plumenic, a nephew of the Chafetz Chaim, just succeeded a female rabbi in her temple, and they advertise everyone welcome, including interfaith couples. And this is a young man who studied right here in this kollel in the last decade. Okay, fine. And there are many more examples. The worst that can happen is one thing when you sell Kol HaTorah Kula down the drain, but money, what people will do for money. And this reflects today the self-inflicted or man-inflicted aguna, where men will not, I don't have to tell you what's going on in Washington, D.C. with the couple from Baltimore. One of them is the lady, her parents were my students, etc., etc. I have a connection. What's going on? And you multiply that. It chokes. It's a chilul Hashem she'en kedugmato. Okay. Just as bad. Could you imagine the night of the wedding, the chatan, and I knew this person. It ruined his marriage. His wife never forgave him, and I don't blame her. They remained married, had children, but it was not the marriage I wish upon anyone in this room. The night of the wedding, and he was an American, she was Israeli, with big yichus, a fine family, but a very open woman. She was very matima, very pasik. I don't know how to say that in any other language. How would you say that in English? Very fitting, it would make sense. Very pasik, very fitting, matima, for an American like that. And the night of the wedding, he refuses to sign the ketuvah until her father promises another ex. Thousands of dollars, years ago, and he refused to go to chuppah until the money was promised and added to the ketuvah or the tanayim. It's a true story. Okay, the story we have right here. What happened at the time of the Ramah? Friday afternoon, there's a wedding. This kala. And it's all in the Tshuvat HaRamah. I'll give you all the sources shortly. This kala came, her father was a businessman, made money, made a nice shidduch for her, and then lost money. The wedding keeps on being delayed because he can't come up with the dowry. And he drops dead. People die suddenly. Could very well be part of the reason was the tension engendered by the inability to come up with the money. So now the girl is a yatoma, and her mother's brother takes her under his wings, and he promises he will come up with the money. And the girl is told, go to mikveh. This was a different world. That's not the world you live in, where you choose your own wives, make your own decisions. This is a world of shidduchim, which I don't want to laugh at it. It may be as good as the world we live in today. We all make mistakes, so mistakes happen then too. And she's told to go to mikveh. She goes to mikveh. The wedding is all set. And the chuppah, the ramah, the chvodo v'atzmo is going to be mesadeh kedushin in Krakow. It's Friday afternoon. And the chatan is not pleased with what her uncle is coming up with financially. And he says, no tiki, no washi. You know what that expression means? Every laundromat, when we were growing up, Rabbi Byrus is here, he would testify they were Chinese. They didn't speak English. But if you didn't have the ticket for the laundry you brought in, no tiki, no washi. In Israel, they're all geniuses, and they remember who brought what. There's no ticket, and sometimes there's no wash, but that's a different story. No tiki, no washi. So the chatan says to the ramah, he is not going to chuppah. Now tell me, how do you treat a kala who's already gone to mikveh, already has put on her dress to get married, a Jewish woman, a Yiddish tachta, a Bat Yisrael? How do you treat her? Could you imagine how she felt? And they start pleading with the guy, and he's an action, and he doesn't budge. And finally, the uncle comes up, they put scrape together more money, and finally, 2-3 hours after Shabbat began, he agrees to marry her. And the Ramah is Mesada Kedushin Friday night. Could you imagine? 10 o'clock. We have eyewitness. I'll give you all the sources. 10 o'clock at night. Now, before I go further, I want to say something about Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University is having a lot of problems now. Lack of students. It's much more than that. Today's student, and Tova Lichtak, the Tova Lichtenstein hits the nail on the head in her article in Tradition. You see, when we went to Yeshiva, it was magnificent. For those who wanted a dual track, you had a Litvashi Yeshiva. This was the Rav's thinking. I cite him in my work on the Rav, word by word, in Volume 2. I don't make this up. All I did was I translated it from Yiddish to English, and no one yet has corrected one word that I mistranslated. So, all right, Baruch Hashem. The Rav was explaining the difference between him and Rav Hirsch. I don't want to go into detail now. I've lectured on this extensively over the decades. But the Rav made the point, he's not like Rav Hirsch. He believes the yeshiva has to be a real Litvashi yeshiva, like for Lashon. But he says we also need a college education. You have to be part of the Western world. The Rav's famous part. And what was beautiful about yeshiva is you had under one roof a real wonderful Litvashi yeshiva, Rashi Yeshiva Gedolei Yisrael. And then you went upstairs, you went to college, and you could broaden in accordance with what you were interested in. But we valued our general studies. We didn't laugh at math and science and liberal arts and history and social science and literature. I don't say every branch of wisdom appealed to me, but everyone found their way, what you were interested in. I went into history, Jewish history. I mean, Baron Lichtenstein, you all know, did a doctorate in Harvard in English literature. Everyone found their way, and it was a very, very unique institution. Nowadays, what has happened is, and it's very sad, that most students treat college as not an educational experience, not a broadening experience, not coming in touch with the beauty and the majesticness that the Western world has to offer to us. I'm not talking about the trash, but the Western world, what we've achieved in civilization, what we can achieve in math and science of allergy and chemistry, the social sciences, and even the beauty of literature, it's ennobling. No, they don't view it that way. They view college, a vocation. Got to get out of here. We got to make a living. We don't want to be umgliks. We don't want to be mendicants. We don't want to be beggars. We got to get out. All right, let's go to college. So, and what's happened is now yeshiva is losing students. First of all, they can go to Landa College. Landa College is exactly the concept of Torah and vocation. There's no liberal arts. It's not broad. They have a wonderful program. But the program is geared. You can go on. Medical school, accountancy school, a lawyer. These are wonderful concepts. But it's not yeshiva university. If you don't want to go to Landy, you go to a Beis Medrash in the morning, a Jew has to learn Torah, you go to Madregat Adam in Queens, and then you go to Queens College at 1 o'clock. You can go to any, in Shayashiv in Far Rockaway, they advertise, we accommodate your college studies in the afternoon. There's no Seder in the afternoon. But you wind up with pure vocation. Why am I saying this? And Yeshiva had a lot to offer, because on the Ramah, a brilliant doctorate was done in Bernard Rebel Graduate School by Rabbi Dr. Asher Ziv. He gave us the edited edition of Tshuvat HaRamah, and he won Pras Tel Aviv for Torah literature because of this magnificent work that until today it is the prime example how to edit Tshuvat of an early Akron. You look at Rabbi Dr. Asher Ziv, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, at his Tshuvat HaRamah. It is fabulous. If you haven't held it in your hands, go down to the library. We have it. Look at it. Hold it in your hands. Get a feel for what Rabbi Dr. Asher Ziv did. And this, to me, was the greatness of yeshiva, that you could be great in Torah, climb the ladder of Yiret Shemayim, and have a broad perspective way beyond the little ghetto that we love to live in and find ourselves at times. All right, this is a tremendous challenge. It hurts me to see yeshiva begging for students and running ad after ad. Now, you know, I know the inside story because I complained very bitterly when they cut back on Gris Kollel. And I didn't know my words carry a little weight, but I have to say that the big shots and ultimately President Richard Joel came to see me, sat with me in my office, and explain to me it's not anti-Israel, but what the budgetary problems are and the loss of students. And of course, this became the lead article. I have it here. 1 month ago in Jewish Week, the lead article, six-column headline, Yeshiva University struggles today. So I say, maybe someone is listening and it will influence them. Let me get a real yeshiva education and let me get a real university education. And where can I combine it at YU? And Richard Joel said so beautifully, out of Lakewood, maybe some Gedolei Yisrael will come. Out of Harvard, maybe some great professors. YU's the only institution in the world where perhaps we'll have Gedolei Yisrael and people who are great in their fields of choice if they so wish. And truer words were never spoken. Okay, now, where does this begin? It begins, Shelet Tshuvot HaRamah, Harav Dr. Asher Ziv, published by Mossad Rav Kook, Tshuva Kuf Chaf Hei. Now, I just want to tell you something else, that when I held this Tshuva in my hand, it brought back unbelievable memory to me, because I was being, to use the modern Hebrew word, medaftef. I was playing with the pages. So I take a look, the Tshuva before, and then it hit me between the eyes. The Tshuva before is also very famous. It deals with Stam Yenam. And the Rama was very mekil. He discusses Stam Yenam, and you can have hanor from it, you can sell it, you can do business with it, it's not Yayin Nesach. And he even goes so far as to be matir drinking Stam Yenam if a person is sick. It's unbelievable. And you know, this takes me back to my aggravation in the rabbinate, how many years ago? 51 years ago in the Lower Merion Synagogue. Takes me back to that aggravation. If the Balabas was a London, he could have said to me, Rabbi, you have to understand, I'm sick. If I don't have this good French wine, I have convulsions. I have the Tshuva HaRamah. Now, why did this bring back a lot of memories? I remember like yesterday, sitting in the Rav's Shir was Rabbi Rabin. Remember the name? I write about him. He was a graduate of the seminary, I think, 1929. One day, he was on the halachic, the Committee on Jewish Law of the seminary. So I remember that one day he comes to the Rav Rebbe, they're discussing non-kosher wine, and they're quoting a Rama, and I want to know what I should say, what my opinion should be. And after Shia, remember like yesterday, the Rav sent Aaron Lichtenstein up to the library to bring the Tshuva HaRamah. There was not an edited edition yet. I can still see the old Tshuva HaRamah in front of me. And the Rav is sitting with Rabbarin, with Rabbi Reitan, going through this Tshuva and showing Rabbi Reitan, you have to be opposed that Stam Yenim you can sell. You're not telling people who own stores not to sell Stam Yenim, but you cannot drink it. And even though the Ramah was made here, it's only that some v'makom cholish, it could be, but he was not happy about the hetar. Okay, anyway, so that tshuva broke back a lot of memories. Now the tshuva on the marriage is kuf chaf hei, and the Rama begins so beautifully. V'yashmacharai kol rash gadol. Asher haviru kol b'machane lomah. Habitu acharei Moshe. He's paraphrasing the Chumash. B'mase hanase al yadomi karol. Shesidati kudushin tachat hachupa kederech haaretz. Shakol yodin seida hakala lama nichnesa lechupa. Fahaya bishon laila baleo shabbat kisha'a umachza Belila. And he says, everyone is gossiping about me, everyone is cursing me, everyone is maledicting me, everyone is murmuring, everyone is talking about the Ramara Kalbat. Could you imagine with the websites today what would be going on the Fuss's Nice, False Messiah, Yeshiva News, Chadrei Charedim, right or wrong, give me some other websites. Did I give enough already? Could you imagine what would be going on today? So they were gossiping, they were furious, they were angry, they were mad. The Rama was Masada Kedushin Friday night. Now, what time was it? There's a long, you have to see the magnificent footnotes here. But there's a long footnote from an eyewitness who was a Talmud of the Rama. And he tells the story as he saw it, and he said they weren't Masada Kedushin until 2 hours after the Tzeitak HaChavim. And only when the Chatan agreed, then he was Masada, the Rama was Masada Kedushin, V'yachakach Hitpalalu Mariv B'Veit Knesset Shalom. Could you imagine, let's say, this past Shabbat I was in Caesarea. There's only one minyan. There's actually, it has a branch too, but there's basically only one shul in Caesarea and no early minyan. So let's say the lich benching in Caesarea was, let me just think for 1 second. Yeah, lich benching was about 7:10. Okay, we daven mincha 7:15. So let's say sunset 7:10. 7:30, 7:50 was Seisak HaChavim, so it meant that the Rama would have been Mesada Kedushin at 10 minutes to 10 this past Friday night. Rama says an hour and a half, his student says 2 hours, and the Rama describes in detail how everyone came together, how the collar was dressed, how the veil was pulled over her face, and that this animal, they pleaded with him, but he refused. He refused to listen, and the Rama goes on and on. And of course, halachically, what is wrong with being Masada Kedushin? And if we thought, excuse me?
On Shabbos and also
davening month. What, davening month 2 hours later is not, go to the Kotel, you'll see when the Breslov davens, you'll see how late the minyanim are at the Kotel. That's, unfortunately, that is the most minor of problems. The major problem is that being Masada Kedushin is very fascinating. It's no Issa D'Oraita, what's the Issa? It's an Issa D'Rabbanan. Karmis on Shabbos. I'll give you all the sources in a minute. You can check it all out. Karmis on Shabbos, right? Opening a store. What's wrong with opening a store on Shabbos? What's wrong? So you sell, right? But it's all, you run a cash register, you keep an account, you write down, a kinyan is only an Issa D'Rabbanan. And all this is only an Issa D'Rabbanan. B'mokam tsa lo gazru Rabbanan. And that's exactly the approach that the Rama takes. He goes through the entire sugya, begins the Masechet Beitza, and of course he says, "Meika Hadin, absolutely, Yesh Lahachmir Liot Zrizin Kodem Hashabbat Shelo Yavol Lideikach. We shouldn't have to be Machal Shabbos." But in this case, Tzorech Hashah Mivi Lahakil B'Devarim Elu She'enan Eli Isur D'Rabbanan U'B'Mokom HaDechak Lo Gazru. And he says, we have to worry here. Biyush HaBetula. You see, the feminists say the rabbis don't have feeling for women. That is such a canard. That is such a lie. Don't read my article, read Rakafarara, and I republished my work on Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan Spector, Gedolei Yisrael, what they were, Maisa Nefesh. Do I have to go further? I know what Dami Aaron Rakefet. Read Washington. Don't I write in there that people thought the Arguna was related to me? Remember what I write? I once spoke about it in public. And Rabbi Lichtenstein was sitting there in total agreement with me that the greatest disgrace was people thought I only helped this woman because she was related to me. People fainted when I said I met the woman once in my life for 2 minutes to arrange for her to go to the Beit Din with the lawyer. Didn't know the woman at all. No, then I quoted from the Rav. Remember when the Rav speaks about the Chayim, Rav Chesed? I quoted from Rav Meir Berlin when he asked the Yoruch HaShulchan, I believe it was, and he asked the Rav, and he asked the Chayim, the Yoruch HaShulchan and the Chayim, what is the role of a Rav in life that I have in the Rav? And here you see the love for this young lady. And he says, once it was clear that he agreed, quickly as Masada Kedushin, V'yitaneg l'shalom b'onik Shabbat achakach. And he says, afterwards you can do the onik Shabbat, we daven, we makabel Shabbos, we make Kiddush, V'yichol ha-mitzvah l'chapri alav in kavanato l'shem shamayim. And of course, the mitzvah of saving the scholar, of not letting her be embarrassed, is the greatest mitzvah of all. V'shalom. And I love the way he signs off. Peace! Nu'um Moshe ben La'avi Adoni Mori Harab Yisrael Zeich HaTzadik L'chayelam Haba Nikra Moshe Ishelis. My name, I'm known as Moshe Ishelis Mikrakow. Okay? That's the tshuva. And it's beautifully edited by Rabbi Dr. Asher Ziff. Do you know his grandchildren? Okay, his grandchildren, I believe, are in yeshiva, but he was a fabulous individual. He's Yerushalmi Bamakar, came to America, and was a Talmud of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, got smicher in the 30s. He was Rav of the biggest modern Orthodox shul in the Bronx, when the Bronx once was teeming with Jews, right next to Cretona Park. And I have a very soft spot in my heart for Rabbi Ziv and that shul, because in that shul, Bnei Akiva met, and in Bnei Akiva, I met my wife. And Shali v'Shala, to paraphrase the Gemara, Shalahu. Okay. Worlds gone by. The Bronx, Kehilat Israel is the name of the shul. Rav Meisha Biff was a few blocks down. He was the posek for that area, and he was the posek for Bnei Akiva. And when I learned in Lakewood, they wanted to kill me, Rabbi. You know, they wanted to change my outlook, my ashkafa. And I said, "Why do you want that of me?" And our Bnei Akiva, we have no mixed dancing. We go to Rabbi Moshe Bick, and Rabbi Moshe Bick's son was learning there. I think his name was Shol Dov, if I recall correctly. And he was very adamant. He said, "Rothkopf is right. They go to my father. They have their inheritance to my father, and he's their posek. Leave him alone." And boy, they didn't want to kill me. Then they wanted to kill him. And anyone listening from that period in Lakewood will understand what I'm saying. Gentlemen, so you learn the tshuva. You learn the tshuva. Open up the halacha. Open up Shulchan Aruch or Rechayim. I'm holding the Mishnah Berurah in front of me. Hilchat Shabbat, Siman Shin Lamed Tet. Sif Daled. And the Shulchan Aruch Paskin. You don't get married on Shabbos, you don't do business, you don't make a kinyan, you don't get married. You look at the Ramah, here's the tshuva, right in the psak. V'yesh matirin l'kadesh hechi de'en lo isha ubanim. All right. So source goes back to Rabbeinu Tam. Guy doesn't have a wife, doesn't have children. I have to tell you, there's a lot of common sense here. Because as you know, I've lived many, many lives. I still live many lives. And I have to tell you, a young man has a Yetzer Hara. Chazal tell us, I quoted in my lectures on marriage years ago in the Monday class, he told me Ma'od. What's the Ma'od? The Yetzer Tov is Tov, and the ma'od is on the yetzer hara for sex. Without that, who would be boina by it? Who would marry a woman? Who wants to support a stranger? Who wants to have a bunch of bratty kids? I said Shabbos, it was a good vata. I was in Caesarea with older people. The Lieben, Barry and Sue Liebman, contemporaries of ours. So others, and I said, we're all talking about our grandchildren. I guarantee you our grandchildren are not talking about us at this moment. And believe me, unfortunately, I hit the nail on the head. But that's life, as my daughter just told me a few minutes ago. That's the way it should be. She's absolutely right. Children move on, grandchildren move on, and you become an ancient relic from the distant past. Okay, so people should get married. But then you have men, I don't know, women perhaps. There's no Yetzara. They're born tzaddikim, or they supplement it. I mean, these are not people living, it's not the Obama's people. Chas v'chalila, I'm not talking New York Times people. I'm talking good people. And I've seen it with family, I've seen it with students. Boy, if they finally find someone, be Masada Kedushin, 12 midnight on Friday night. Don't let them get away. And that's what he's quoting. The Rabbi is quoting here the Rabbeinu Tam. The Yepsha, to who hadin haknisa lechup eshari, afagav lo kaim alan hachi. Mikoma kom somkin alzeh bishat hadachak, gam ki gadol kovet habriyad, כמו שרגילים שלפעמים לא היו יכולים להשוות עם הדוניה בבום ועוד עד הלילה. Oh my gosh, Menachem, what is he talking about? That very case. They couldn't settle under the dunya. They were fighting. I'm telling you, you think this is ancient history? I know a couple. I was not at the wedding. I was in America yet. The wedding was here. I know a couple, their entire life was shadowed by the indecorous, unforgivable behavior of the chatan, the night of the wedding, holding up his father-in-law for more money. Here it is. Here it is. And if that happens, the Rama says, Olsin chupa v'kedushin b'leil Shabbat. Ho elu kvach hekinu l'sudan asun. First of all, the food is ready. There's a problem here of hefsid merubah. But Malcolm, you're learning Yeredeya. How many times does the halacha change with Hefzik Meribah? Remember, what are we, conservative Jews? Why do we play games with halacha? Remember, I explained this to you. It's very important to understand this. When we say the yesh omrim, it means that b'di'evid, you can be samach on the shita. It's not that, it's like the Rav said, when we permit, the Rama permits old people and young kids and sick people to eat Ed Matzah and Pesach, what does that tell you? That Ed Matzah Meikadin is Mutter. But we're more Machmir. But we permit, if we permit, Meikadin is Mutter. Same thing. The Yeshom Yeshom, Hefzid Meru, Meikah Hadin, Behefzid Meru, Belo Gazru. And Avahavi Biyush Lakala. And in Lo Yikanes, as imagine to take off the hymn, the hymn that they call it, the veil, to take off her dress, not to be married. She went to mikvah. Of course, we should try very much not to be late and not to come to this situation. Okay? So you see, the Rama blends into one. The tshuva from life, he picks up, you can see it was a traumatic experience for him. Shamati kol acharai, murmuring, maledicting him. You know, when we Jews fight, the rabbi in Caesarea spoke about kol machloket shehi l'shem shemayim, right? Pirkei Avot yesterday, Perek Hamishi, sofless kain, she'ein l'shem shemayim, ein sofless kain, right? And he gave a whole pshat, and I'm not, to me, the pshat is simple. I heard it already from the Bali Musa when I was 13 years old. I heard it from the Shanghai crowd. Kol machloket shehi l'shem shemayim, when the Yetzahara retzachayim talks to you, gets you to believe, my opinion is l'shem shemayim, Once you fight in the Yetzer Hara, as you wound up that it's L'shem Shemayim, you're never going to budge. Sofali L'chitkayim. So you see, the Rama understood already, the Machloket is beginning, the Rama was Rosada Kedush, and Leil Shabbos, Kedush, and Oismaf, a Bam, a Trumpenik, a Pushtak, and a Pikaitis, call them what you wish, a Tzioni, they would say today, a Zionist. So he has to defend himself, but you see, it left a traumatic impression. That shuv is right here. Now, it's very interesting to look at the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah there. No, the Ketuvah, they take make a kinyan on, that's all. You can always... first of all, the Ketuvah probably was not affected by all the money. It was probably the Tanayim. And you make a kinyan. Once you make a kinyan, with that incident I told you with Rabban Soloveitchik, with the ketuvah that had your sister, the ketuvah that had the wrong date. So Rabbi was a nervous wreck when the guy comes over and says, Rebbe, I thought I heard read, 100 years earlier, the Chaim Gold copied it from a Minigah Groth thing. So Rabbi was a nervous wreck, and we had not yet found the new ketuvah. I once was at a wedding where a Chassidic, where a Lubavitcher wrote a ketuvah out by heart. I couldn't believe it. They passed the first ketuvah, and he wrote a ketuvah by heart perfectly. But Rabbi didn't know how to write, or couldn't write a whole ketuvah by heart. So he said, "Bidyevit, even if they had lived together, it would be okay because there was a kabbalat kinyan on the ketuvah. You follow? The chitkayvut was there already. So what we did when we found the new ketuvah was rewrite it." But the Hitchayvut we already had from before, although I think we did a Kabbalat Kinyan again. But anyway, the Chafetz Chaim in his Tzidkut, it's amazing what he says in the Mishnah Berurah, that he says, not so terrible to be Masada Kedush on Friday night, the Ramah is right, but there can be other problems. And what does he mention? Tell me, when you got married, they take candles to chuppah? Isn't that a minig Yisrael that really we don't know how it began, and some people today are makpid to do it, some people not. We don't know. There are reasons given, but we really don't know how this minig began. And he says, here they're carrying candles. It's Shabbos. No, it's Muktzah. And then he says, do women go to the chuppah? And if they go to the chuppah and you're late with the chuppah, when will they light Shabbos candles? Chas v'chalila, they'll light Shabbos candles on Shabbos. And didn't I see that twice in my life? Do I write about it in Washington? When I went into the Reform Temple, when I came to Maplewood, New Jersey in 1962 to see the power of the temple. And it was Shabbos began like 4:30, I ate, and I had only one little girl, and I told my wife, I'm going to the Reform Temple, I want to sit in back, I want to see what goes on here. And the rabbi says, we are honoring Mrs. So-and-so with the kindling of the Sabbath lights in honor of her granddaughter's confirmation this week. And a woman gets up 3 hours after Shabbat began, and with a brand, they make a bracha in English, the rabbi makes in Hebrew, she makes in English, and they light candles. And didn't I see that at the Hyatt Hotel when the OU wrote me in? There, it was the World Convention, World Parliament of the Jews who are concerned, the Zionist organization. Oh, I'll never forget that Shabbat. And this rabbi with a beard and a big kippah on his head. And I say, what time are we davening Kabbalat Shabbat? He says, well, I don't think you'll want to daven with us. You daven in the hotel. There was a Sephardic minion there. As I daven, I sit that the dinner is at 7 o'clock, and it's already, Shabbos was at 4:35. So I sit in the hallway outside my room. I had a Gemara. 7 o'clock, I say to Malka, let's go down to the dining room. And we walk past this big room, and we can't believe our eyes. Innovative service. 200 women who care about the Jewish people, otherwise they wouldn't be there, are lighting Sabbath candles 2.5 hours after Shabbat began. So I saw it twice in my life. And I want you to know, until today, it disturbs me. But it was fascinating. When I spoke after the meal, the group that came to hear me, among them were some people from Atlanta, Georgia. And I threw out, how did you feel about seeing these people like Sabbath candles? Evidently all Balei Tshuva, all Rabbi Feldman's Balei Tshuva. And they say to me, Rabbi, they don't know any better. They were so understanding. Couldn't believe my ears. Lighting candles Friday night. Like lighting Hanukkah candles on Shabbos, Lo Aleinu. And they were understanding. I was not. But, and this is what the Mishnah Brura says, the light candles on Shabbos, Chas V'Chalila. And then he says, don't make a wedding Erev Shabbos. But if it winds up that you do make a wedding, and the sun sets, take the candles you led the Chatan V'Kala to Chuppah, and give them away to the Gentiles who were present. Now, you can see a world from that comment. It shows you that in Eastern Europe, when Jews made a wedding, and a wedding is a big affair, Gentiles came out as well. It could be they were neighbors, could be they were business acquaintances. It seems there was social intercourse between the Jew and Gentile at times. And that's the Mishnah Brura worried about the candles. Tell me, Danny, at your wedding, did they have candles? You think, or you don't know, or you forgot, or
it's a while back.
It's a while back. Okay, Baruch Hashem. You don't know what good souls are sitting here. And you don't know how much fear I have where they'll be 10 years from now. Understand? We can mention names from our time who were the giants. And you know what the worst part is, Danny? You're going to be isolated. Yeah, so you're going to be in an area, you're going to be the biggest Talmud Chacham there. And you can wind up, you know, that believing in yourself, that you're smarter than your Rebbeim, you're smarter, you're in a different area, and they're pressures of life. You understand? We'll talk about it next week. Sadly, we have many success stories from the Kol Moshe. I don't want to scare you. We have many success stories. But when I saw that advertisement, Interfaith Families, believe me, I was troubled.
Well, maybe it was Tzatzchut.
When you are Tzatzchut, you're Makarov, an interfaith family means you get a Hechshit into marriage. That's the problem. But he succeeded a woman in the rabbinate there. You can imagine already what the synagogue is like. Okay. I've had more experience. A Talmud of mine in Chicago does in conversion. And I said, look, he's an Orthodox boy, he's my Talmud, he's Rabbi Soloveitchik Talmud, sat in the Kollel. I find out he slapped the face of the whole rabbinate in Chicago. No conversion can go through if it doesn't go through Rabbi Gedalia Schwartz, George Schwartz, one of the RCA. Our time, he's a little older than he was in his, he's in his 80s today, he must be 10 years older than I am. It's a giant of Torah. They have an order. You go and you upset the apple cart. Very not nice. I wrote to my Talmud. I never got an answer. Never got an answer, which I don't like either. Your Rebbe writes to you, at least answer. You don't agree with your Rebbe, explain why. But don't ignore. I called, I left a message, then I wrote a letter. Okay. And I apologized. Because there were big balabatim from Chicago who heard me defend them, I wrote a letter of apology that I was wrong. I wrote a letter and it made a big impression. You know, I'm wrong. I have to admit when I'm wrong. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. Intellectual honesty. Humility. Gentlemen, this wedding shows up all over the place. Did you go to the Chaya Yadam? Hilchot Shabbat? Klal Lamed Chet, Sif Kotten Vav, and you find exactly the same story. Now, a few words about the Chayyadim, Avram Danzig. You should know that the Rav was enamored of him. The Rav once gave a Yotzai Shir, Rabbi Joseph H. Lookstein commented that only the Rav could give a Yotzai Shir like this. He began a five-hour shiur by speaking about the grocery store in Vilna. And the whole audience was caught up. And then he spoke about the Chayyadim, and spoke about something he paskined, and the whole shiur was based upon it. Chayyadim owned the grocery store. He and his wife, that's how he supported himself. It was a giant of sack. When the Chayyadim first appeared, you know, we Jews are critical. I see all the critiques written about my scholarship. One of them was a tremendous study done at Bar-Ilan, like 78, 80, 90 pages. So he describes me, you know, never interviewed me, but just, I've become more Haredi. That my first book I published with JPS, but my second book already with Feldheim. You have no idea how off the wall that is. The reason I couldn't go to JPS again is I couldn't afford the postage. I was living in Israel. It was after the Yom Kippur War. We were as poor, pardon the expression, as church mouse. It cost me a fortune to send copy back and forth. It's before computers, before the world in which you live today, the world of magic. So thank God Feldheim was here and they hadn't gone Haredi yet, so they were still able to handle a volume by a YU graduate. And you have no idea, but the critique goes on that, you know, I'm on the border between people who tell stories of Gedolei Yisrael, Nishke Shtegin, Nishke Flegin, and serious scholarship. I don't know if I'm on the border. I hope every word I've printed is correct, but when I tell a story, it's an anecdotal story. The Rav told many a story, but the Rav spoke with such awe when the Chayyadim came out. You don't know the opposition. This you can do research on. They said, a grocer has the nerve to paskin? He has the nerve to decide between the Taz and the Magen Avraham? Who is he? A grocer. And that grocer was a Gadol Shebegadolim. Anyway, that's the Chayyadim. And there are many stories about him. He was a tremendous posek, tremendous insight. And at the end of Sif Vav, and he talks about the Bishat HaDchak, Kigon Shein HaChatan V'Kali Yecholim LaShvot B'Yom Vav, U'Machmat K'Tatan Nimshachat HaLayla. They're still fighting. It's the same case until the middle of the night. And it's a Bachur Shelo Kiyem Piriya B'Rivya V'Kva Chechinu Tzachei HaSuda V'Yesh Hepsed Godol U'Biyush לחתן וקלה, שתהיה רמה בתשובתו להיות החופה בשבת, והוא עצמו סידי קדושן, מפני שגדול כבוד הבריות. And there is the Chayei Adam certifying the Rama, certifying the Haggad to the Shulchan Aruch, and you can see this little grocer from Vilna. How big was his grocery store? A giant of giants with a tremendous backbone in learning. On this case, I give you one more source. I introduce you to a very fascinating sefer, Klilat Yofi. There are many svarim by this name. Klilat Yofi means something beautiful. It's by Reb Chaim Natan Dembitzer, and it's about the rabbinate in Lviv. Of all the rabbanim who were in Lviv, Lemberg, he gives a beautiful sefer describing them, describing their work in the rabbinate, what they wrote, what they accomplished. Now, this author, Reb Chaim Natan Dembitzer, is a direct descendant of the Rama. So, in his introduction, beginning on page 10 Zion Amid Bet, again I repeat, in the Mavo, beginning on page 10 Zion Amid Bet, there's a long footnote about the Rama. And he says, if I'm talking about the Rabbinate in Lviv, I also want to describe in a footnote whom I'm descended from and who the Rama was. And he quotes some of his Shuvat where he showed tremendous koach lehakel. And of course, the most important shiva he quotes is this very one where he was Masada Kedushin in the middle of Friday night. What's fascinating about the introduction, and it's a good read, is Poland. How Poland became the hotbed of Torah. And he's talking about, you know, Poland was established, Jews started coming into Poland 1400, 1500, they were not learned. They were not B'nai Torah. They didn't have college in the sense of Torah learning on a level. It was very primitive. And he said, but Poland was blessed. And remember, he's writing this before the Chmielnicki massacres. He said by the 1400s, Germany and Italy had endless persecution. The Jews were being tortured. Gemaras were being burned at the stake. The Pope hated the Jews with a passion. These are his words, ha-pifia. And he says, but Poland, the Jews were able to do business. They got along with their neighbors. They could live b'sheket u'b'sha'anan b'ein machrid u'mafriya. And then he says, the Rabbanim were able to institute learning groups. The minute Jews started to learn, the whole atmosphere in Poland changed. It's a very fascinating document. Gentlemen, we have 20 minutes left in the year. I have one more example to give you that carries right through to the greatest miracle of Jewish existence since Churban HaBayit. How many of you walk around with knives? No? Yitzchak? Why do you carry a knife? Are you a sheikh?
I use it maybe 15 times a day.
What do you use a knife for?
I cut a package.
No, I'm saying you can get
that.
No, say the you use it right. We see a nice Boy Scout knife. Fine, that's what you give a bar mitzvah gift.
No, this is what you call a cotton cutter.
A cotton cutter, okay. Zolzayna said. See that we, Rabbi Barnes, we have many graduates of the yeshiva. Rabbi Reuben carries a knife. By the way, tomorrow, either Rabbi Reuben agrees with me, or it's really a machoiket l'shem shemayim, because I'm bringing a Rambam that, to me, settles the score. But that's tomorrow. We'll see. You have freedom of choice, yes. Gentlemen, graduate school, I had a terrific professor, Avraham Yitzchak Agus, Erwin A. Agus, was a character par excellence. Product of dropsy, you don't know what I'm talking about, but dropsy was an interesting institution. Professor Zeitlin, he was a Talmud of Professor Zeitlin. And he came from a very prominent Orthodox family, and his mother, Bezivik Shani, was married to Harry Fischel. So when you're Harry Fischel's wife's son-in-law, son, believe me, you carry a little clout. You know, Harry Fischel was Shmuel. Next year I'm doing something very special on Monday due to my age. I got to get it out of me because I see everyone else around me is already walking with canes and I'm running yet. A student saw me from the light rail and called me, said, Rebbe, you're walking as quizzy you walked 40 years ago. And I studied me in Rehovah Barbanel, Baruch Hashem, the history of Torah in the United States. Interested or not interested? At least 2 years of good work. You'll learn who Harry Fischel was. Suffice it to say, if you were Harry Fischel's son-in-law, you wouldn't have a care in the world. You'd be smoking a silver pipe, you understand what I'm saying? And your pen would be 24 carats gold. Or the chief rabbi of Haifa. That's Harry Fischel's grandson-in-law. But he's worth the chief rabbinate on his own. He's like Rabbi Lichtenstein. Don't mention that he's the Rav's son-in-law. He's Rabbi. Gentlemen, So I studied about the Middle Ages. Professor Agus did his doctorate on the Maram Mewutenberg. The Maram Mewutenberg, as you all know, was the Rebbe of the Russia, talking about the Middle Ages, the Gedole Yisrael. So Maram Mewutenberg brings down in his Tshuvat that when you go into a Beit Knesset, you cover up your sword. And he says, why do you go into a Beit Knesset? Tfila maricha yamav shel adam v'hasakin l'katzer. You go into a Beit Knesset to daven, to plead to God, to have long life. And a knife kills. What's the Maram talking about? So it's a lot of Jews carrying around knives. So of course, you have to understand the era. Jews did business. In order to do business, they traveled. They had to buy cheap and sell, or they had to come from their hometown and bring the goods with them and sell it elsewhere. I don't have to tell you the Grach, Hagon Reb Chaim, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, when you study his magnum opus, Yenam, that came out, I believe it's 2 years already, a year and a half ago, and it's overwhelming, I have to say. The work, I kissed Chaim, I said to him, I don't know if there are more than 10 people in the world that can understand what you did, but I am one of those 10. And when I finished it, I was just blown away. The man's mastery of Shas, Poskim, and scientific Chokmah Yisrael, Jewish scholarship. So you'll see how he explains the businesses that the Jews got into. But there was one problem. No, if you're in Syria today, how do you travel from city to city? Sakonet nefasha. So you have to take a knife with you. Today would be a gun. What are you saying? That today you need a rocket with you. To God have mercy. But the highways would be sakana. You all know the Tfilat HaDerech. We say it today, we drive, all right. It's a sakana. But then it was a sakana. People could jump on you, kill you. How many Jews we see from the tshuva? Husbands went out, went to business, never came back. Agunot. I'll deal with that in this class in a few years down the line. I'll deal with agunot. But that's why the knife. Very fascinating. That Maram Mewutenberg that I'm quoting from Tshuvat Maram Mewutenberg, Kuf Yud Tet, that tshuva that he writes, exactly what I quoted to you, you open up the Shulchan Aruch, Orach Chaim, Hilchat Beit Knesset, Siman Kuf Nun Aleph, Sif Katan Hey, or I should say Sif Katan, let me just be sure I'm reading the numbers right, Vav, Mutalikanes Beit Knesset, B'maklo B'tamilo B'fundato. You're allowed, you know, to go into the shul. You know what this is. This is paraphrasing the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, where Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Yehoshua, I want you to come to me on your Yom Kippur. Remember them, home machloiket. B'tamilo, b'punda. What does it mean? Weekday clothes. You walk into the shtiblach, so you'll see people who walk in jeans, people who walk in Bermudas. The shtiblach in Katamon. I don't know if you can walk into the Shtiblach in Meir Sharim in Bermudas, but in Katamon, they only have a takoni, you can't daven for the Yomer. If you're wearing Bermudas, you can't daven for the Yomer. But otherwise, people walk in, they daven. No, so it says, you walk into the shul, you're coming from the shuk, you're carrying a package, whatever, it's not the most dignified, but you are allowed. V'yesh osrim likanespo besakin aroch. Wow, look into the Magen, look into the Taz, Lefisha Tvila Ma'arichaya Mavshal Adam, Fisakin Mikatseret. So the Taz makes a diyuk that when you come in with a small sakin, you're allowed to come in. It's only when you come in with a big sakin. But the Marami Rottenberg gives you an easy solution. Cover it up. You know what's amazing here? When the Chafetz Chaim deals with this, it is amazing how he understands it. That, why should you come into a sakin, to a Beit Knesset? Who carries a knife around? He didn't study with Professor Agus. The Chafetz Chaim is not aware of what Professor Agus had to say. Not aware of the Marami Rittenberg, not aware of the Middle Ages and how they live. You know how he interprets this? It's just beautiful. Tell me, in days gone by, you studied in a Beis Medrash. Every community had Bate Medrash. There were no yeshiva. You stayed in the Beis Medrash. That's the way every community ran. Voloshin was the first yeshiva. It was a tremendous chiddush. It took many years for Voloshin to be emulated. No, if you're studying the Beis Medrash, you have to eat. Well, if you're studying the Beis Medrash and in order to continue studying, you have to eat, you're allowed to eat in the Beis Medrash. It's Lidva Mitzvah. It's for study. So, the Chafetz Chaim writes, it has to be dealing with the Talmud Chacham who brought along a knife in order to cut his bread, his food. Look into this very source I told you, Beit Knesset, Or Chaim Kufnun Aleph, Sifav. Look into the Bi'ur Halacha, Umistavra, She'ein Lach Mir B'Zala B'Yan Hashim Di'Alma. That if general people come in with a knife, they're not allowed to eat in the Beis Medrash. But if a Talmud Chacham comes in, Aval Talmud Chacham Shemuta Lechol V'Lishtot Shem V'Hasakin Shenosei Shem Hu Retzorech Tashmisho Mistavra Demuta Kamo B'Chol Achila Shelo Utsrak L'Kasoto Rak Be'et Shegamal Yishtamesh Bo U'Matchil V'Reich Birchat HaMazon. Isn't that something? Isn't that beautiful? He couldn't conceive that you're carrying a knife to protect yourself. The only knife could be a Talmud Chacham coming to eat. And when you're coming to eat, you don't have to cover up the knife. Yes, Yitzchak.
So in modern day parlance.
Wait, one second. One second, you're one step ahead of me. Gentlemen. Ashreinu shezachinu lakach, that this has entered halachic literature in our lifetime. It is maisim b'chol yom. They give you a gun in the army, you cannot part from that gun. You got to remember, God have mercy, how many eyes are watching to rob guns, Jews and Arabs. We have gangsters, Lo Aleinu, you all know, Jewish gangsters. As a matter of fact, lately I see Minhag Yisrael. Every murderer appears in court. You see these guys, last Friday night, that terrible story out of Be'er Sheva. The guy, big black kiparnas, Tzadik Yisod Olam. He only murdered a father of two children last Friday night in front of the guy's wife, all because the man told him, don't make noise, I'm trying to put the little baby to sleep. It's unbelievable. With a kippah. It's not the only one. So gangsters want to rob. I don't have to tell you the Arabs want to rob. So when you get your gun, this is very serious. When you're kravi, not a jobnik. I see the way my grandchildren speak of jobniks. It's like the greatest disgrace in the world. So far I have already, can I hire over 10 grandchildren? Each one was kravi. Some of them, what they did to become kravi is unbelievable. No, they come home with their guns. They go to daven. Maisim b'chol yom. Guys walk into shuls with machine guns, with bazookas. What people carry around today. You have not only that, I can tell you a secret. They're Shin Bet people, security people, with guns right in their socks, covered up by their pants. You're at the kotel. You're in a public gathering. A machabel, lower lane, who God forbid comes through, they'll blow him away. Because he's looking at the, he doesn't see anyone. He's looking for uniforms. He doesn't, it's not going to pay attention that a plain citizen who just looks like everybody else is going to pull a gun on him. Gentlemen, in relation to Tzva Hagenah Yisrael, I use the word a work in progress. We now have an endless literature dealing with 1,001 problems that we never dreamt about for 2,000 plus years. Chayalei Beit Davat Hayu Kotvim Gitin L'Nesheihem, the famous Gemara in Ketuvot. That was their biggest problem. We have 1,000 more problems. I'm quoting to you from what I believe, and if anyone corrects me, I'll be happy to stand corrected, was the first volume to come out in Dinei Tzava. Today, there are endless volumes. I yet knew the author of this volume. He was a giant. Harav Shlomo Min Haha. I believe you heard the name, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Who was Rav Min Haha? The Rav of Bayit Vagan, from a family from the old Ir Atika, Gedolei Yisrael. He, if I'm not mistaken, he was captured in 48. He was in captivity in Jordan. Rav Min Haha was the Rav of Bayit Vagan and taught at Michlala. And this appeared in 1971, Dinei Tzava v'Milchama, Madrich l'Talmidim l'Krat Giyusam l'Tzahal. And I have the original edition, page 56, subdivision 106. It's paraphrasing the Mordechai, the Shulchan Aruch. Im hadavav shari, mutav lo lahachnis neshek lebeit kneset, ki veit hakneset miyuad latfila hamarichot et chayav shel adam b'od haneshek noad lekatzer yamav. And paskins lahalacha, exactly what the soldiers do if they're aware and sensitive to the issue. They will put it under their seat. They can't leave it outside. It has to be with them. It has to be at all times within eyesight. They will put it under their seat. And that's the way they solve the problem, if you can. If you can't, we're in a state of war. I don't have to tell you, Pikuach Nefesh Docha Kol HaTorah Kula. And finally, the final source for today, for the year, in our Sunday class, a new edition that just came out, probably one of the greatest books written in our lifetime, one of the greatest svarim, Shmirat Shabbat Kehulchata, Rabbi Yehoshua Yeshayahu Neuwirth, also from Bayit Vagan. And as you know, a third edition just came out. The volume is so heavy, you have to be a weightlifter to pick it up. Or you have to be young. I need a weightlifter. You're probably young. Maybe you can manage it. And I have to tell you, he has an entire section dealing with these very questions. Sheilut Bitachon. I don't think we ever heard of such words before in any halachic literature in two modern times. And he deals with these very problems. You can go through it. It's all those unbelievable questions. If you're called up on Shabbat, and I had this with grandsons, called up in the middle of Shabbat. Okay, you can take your gun. Not a problem. You can take your canteen. Not a problem. Can you take your tefillin? Your siddur, your chumash, you don't need it for Shabbat. certainly don't need the tefillin. What do you say? And of course, so much has been written, and the answer is absolutely, because when a chayal is called up, and it means an emergency situation, what's called batash, bitachon shotef, he has to have peace of mind. And we are mat to many things, even, for instance, lo aleinu in a battlefield, which I saw with my own eyes when I was 3 weeks in Lebanon in 82, you have bodies. Can you move them on Shabbat? Lo aleinu. Where do you get challah? The Gemara in Shabbat, of course, put challah on the body. Go find challah on a battlefield. And you move them. The Chevra Kadisha does its work because you don't want soldiers going into battle to be depressed. This is a terrible sight to see. And you can give many examples where this question of morale with the din de rabbanim, b'makom tzar lo gazru rabbanim, everything the Ramah says about Siddur Kedushin, you can see endless tshuvot that are written. Cleaning weapons on Shabbat, getting a tank ready in an emergency, taking tanks out of storage. You're not certain the tank will be used. Will it be used that afternoon? Will it be used at night? And there you can have malachat d'oraita involved in cleaning a tank. You understand? Endless tanks are kept in storage. You're not going to keep 3,000 tanks working every day. And all this has to be ready within minutes. Within minutes, people are called up, work, the tanks are needed, crews, disabled tanks, fixing. Oh, what questions have been asked. And Sefer after Sefer has come out. There are entire libraries you can put together now on Dinei Tzava v'Milchama. And Ad kedei kach, that it reaches Shmirat Shabbat kechulchata. So first of all, ani rotzeh laodot l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. You know, when you're young, you take life for granted. You take your abilities for granted. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, that I'm not a youngster, but in the classroom today, I was 25 years old. And anyone who calls me a liar, I challenge you. And ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. Secondly, I want to thank you, my students, those that are here, those that are gone already, those that are listening across the world and bother the office trying to reach me. You have to understand that due to the cutbacks at NYU, we have almost no secretarial help. We used to have 3 full-time secretaries and a receptionist. We are left today with 1 receptionist and no secretaries whatsoever. So I want to thank you for your interest, for your corrections, for your insights, for your supplementary sources. And as you saw today, we began this year by quoting this Wishnitzer family out of Chicago. And I have to say, we thank you. Very fascinating for what you added to our understanding of Reb Moshe's tshuva about the shaitel and the beardless individual who asked it. Today in Shir, we touched upon one final topic. We've spent so many months on a tshuva and a psak, and there's no question that occasionally, rarely, the tshuva becomes part of the psak. And the 2 examples I know of, and there may be more, you should ask for Baron Lichtenstein, someone who knows all Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch by heart. I'm sure he'll come up with a few more. But the 2 examples that I know of very well are, of course, the Ramah, which is the classic Shamati, Me'acharai, Kol Rash Gadol. What did Moshe do? And they're all gossiping, and believe me, if you were Masada Kedushin in the middle of Friday night, we'd all be very upset. But if the Ramah did it, there have to be extenuating circumstances. And that's the Tshuvat HaRamah. It's classic. And if you have problems with feminism on campus, quote a Tshuva like this. and show them the Ramar. And you should know this is not the only time there were rabbis who did this in the Bacha Chadashot. I once lectured extensively showing that it happened occasionally, and the Rabbanim were Masadik Kedushin not to embarrass the Kala. All right, we have a halakhic framework. We can't throw out Yisum D'Oraita. But with Yisum the Rabbanim, it's a little bit easier for Makam Salo Gazbi Rabbanim. Okay, there are other factors involved. Hesed Merubah. You have to have a halakhic feeling. We just can't take, like the conservative movement, what became of it, that, or as that Reform Jew said a few weeks ago, how come I had to undergo another conversion because I joined the conservative temple? This guy knows how to learn. He says if they could find a way that homosexuality is permitted and driving your car to shul on Shabbos is permitted, then it's permitted that my father was Jewish, I'm Jewish, I don't need a new conversion. He's absolutely right, but we're Torah Jews. But in the Din Rabbanan, there are other factors at work that are also halachic factors. And of course, we ended off with that example from modern life, the sword, the Marami Rittenberg, Dr. Agis, Bernard Rebel Graduate School, the Chafetz Chaim. How could a Jew be walking with a sword? See, like Yitz Rubin, he sits down on a bench, he pulls out a loaf of bread, he slices the bread with his knife. That's the Chafetz Chaim, the Bir Halacha. But take a look at Rav Shlomo Minaha, and take a look at Shmir Shabbat Gehulchata, take a look at your own life. I have to admit that even though I did basic training and I was a good soldier, but we never took home our guns. The reason was we were Shlav Bet. I was 38 years old at the time, so they used to whisper in our ears, they're worried stiff that you guys don't really know how to use a gun, and they don't want anything to happen. So we keep them here. There was like a safe for guns, and the shikiyah, they call it. It's like mamish, a safe where they like a bolt of guns. He says, when we went home for Shabbos, and we had one guy, they recycled criminals with us, young guys who had been in jail, drug addicted, etc., and they figured these guys would be with older women. We were very good to them. It did work. The army was very smart. We were like father figures to them, father figures they never had. And I remember one guy, Shabu, wanted to take home his gun, and we whispered, boy, he Dafka wants to take home his gun. We said that we understand the army. But I see my children, my grandchildren, who are, you know, real soldiers, although I was a real soldier too, I can't deny it. But my grandchildren take home their guns, have to hide it immediately, and they have to take out the machsanit from the gun, put it in two different places. It's a whole system. Ashreinu shezachinu lekach. We should be thankful to the Almighty after what we have gone through in the 6 million and the white paper and the French and their love of Israel. Baruch Hashem. We should only have leaders, Hashiva Shaftenu Krishoni Vatsenu Kamatchila. That's what should be Saichatur. Yitzchak, this is for you from Rav Asher Weiss. If anyone wants this, this is the issue with the article on YU, and it's very, very sad with all the explanation in here, and it's essentially what Richard Joe told me. Finally, this is the article that the New York Times Lower Lane did investigative reporting. It's on the problem of sexual abuse and reporting it to the authorities. And I tell you, you got to give the New York Times credit. They go in every case and names and incidents and stories. And again, Aaron Rakefik repeats, if you ask me, you have to absolutely report it. God have mercy if someone would come to me, Rebbe, this kid, we suspect this teacher, what do I know about it? What do I understand? How can I tell if a kid is telling the truth? Not. I believe the New York Police Department is not any different than the Israeli police. And you have experts who know how to handle this, who have a degree, who have had training. So that's the New York Times. Everyone is talking about the article. It was sent to me by a number of people, and it's a frightening article. Until we meet tomorrow morning, and tomorrow to get into class, it's 36 grand to the IOU list. The Rebbe waives it in honor of Yom Yerushalayim next Sunday. There's no class next Sunday, only next Monday, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya.
what do you mean you can't come?